So I mentioned Charlie Fish before, and he was one of the top 10 or dozen cardiologists in the whole United States, and therefore the world. Famous internationally. Suzanne Noble is another name, I don't know if you've heard or not yet. She was one of the leaders, very close colleagues of hers, of him, I mean. Doug Zipes was one of the premier cardiac electrophysiologists in the country. I mentioned Harvey Feigenbaum, and I was one of those as well, but in a different area, and mostly in pharmacology and basic research. And we had, so I've just named about six people. We probably had another dozen, so there were about 18 of us that were very prominent. We got lots of grant money from NIH, American Heart Association. And we became forces nationally in national organizations. So we sort of helped the department then grow, because not only did we bring fame to the department and fortune, but we also had enough money that we could then be taxed, and we were taxed. So the chairman would take some of our money and help build endocrinology and metabolism, which was also a pretty strong division then. We got even stronger. Hematology, you know, all the other specialties of medicine, we helped build those out, both by setting examples of recruitment of developing faculty, et cetera, but also by providing some of the financial resources and so forth. And I think cardiology was therefore one of the keys in helping the department really emerge into a, you know, much more of a research force. Am I answering your question? Yes. That question? Okay. And I think by being a strong, nationally known division, it then began to get the rest of the country to say, hey, you know, there's something going on at IU in that department, in the Department of Medicine. We know about cardiology, but other things must be happening there as well. And so other divisions also started to really grow and take off. And when I became chairman in 83, it was already, these other divisions were also beginning to really emerge under Walt Dally's leadership. And when I became chairman, I was able to help build them out even more, and eventually one of the divisions, in fact in 1984, I decided we needed a clinical pharmacology division in the Department of Medicine, which didn't even exist at the time there. It only existed in maybe 15 medical schools in the country at the time. And so I created a search committee, and we started looking around for people, and we found Craig Brader, who was at UT Southwestern in Dallas. And he was our first choice to bring in to head up a clinical pharmacology division. And so we started recruiting him, and in fact, he was the first high-level, that level of recruit that I had done as chairman. And so I recruited Craig in I think, 1984, and he started a cardiology division, and you know what he's done. So that was another, but that's a good story because it's an example of how the school grew and how we were able to bring in some outside blood, outside leadership. He being a premier example of an outstanding leader at that center now. He initially came as the head of that division.
Sort of follow up question for the period and the, actually, you may have answered this for the whole suite of your time at the medical school. When you arrived at the medical school, not only the scale of research funding much smaller, or is it too small, but also the volume of clinical care dollars, because in the 60s, the transition with the rise of third-party payers, development of practice plans. Sort of looking back, what were the consequences for a medical center in a medical school like IU of this huge transformation, both on the clinical side and the research side, in terms of the number of dollars that are moving in and through
Yeah, no, you're right. Both the extramural funding of research as well as the practice plans grew dramatically. And I really would have a hard time saying as far as the whole medical school is concerned. But for the Department of Medicine, which was sort of the 100-pound gorilla, really, we were the largest department for many years. I think probably it still is. In fact, when I was chairman, we were the largest department at the university in terms of the number of faculty, how much money we were generating, all those things. In terms of a single department, we were the largest. But from the time I became chairman until I retired, the research grant funding, I think, increased between 5 and 7-fold. So, you know, big dramatic, even in that 7%. And the practice plan increased, I believe, 2 to 3-fold. So if you go back even earlier to 1963, which is when I came to medical school there, until 1990, which is when I left, which is a lot longer period of time, I would guess that those things increased probably 15-fold, maybe 20-fold, dramatic. And it was for a whole variety of reasons, including funding, payment mechanisms for payment for medical care, the ability to generate practice plans where you could generate income, actually. Then the whole grant system, and then having faculty who could write grants and get awards, get funding. So there was, during that 27-year or so span, there was a really dramatic change. And even during the 7-year span that I was chairman of medicine, there was quite a dramatic change. And then when Craig came on board in 1990, and I think he was chairman, I think, for about 10 years until 2000, again, very dramatic growth. So it was a just major ramp up.
And then the positives of that are obvious in terms of, you know, ability to attract additional researchers to fund new centers of excellence within the school. Were there any ways in which that change in scale and scope had negative consequences, sort of things that once part of the life of the medical school that sort of disappeared as the institution was transformed?
Oh, I don't think there were any real major important negatives. The only one that I could think of perhaps was when you're a medical school that primarily takes care of patients and teaches a medical center /school, and then you evolve into one that takes care of patients, teaches, and also does research. And the research is very important, and some would say is even more important than the other two legs on the stool, although, you know, everybody, we used to argue if they're equally important, but some would say the research is the most important. Whenever that evolution occurs, then there's probably some risk that the teaching emphasis goes down. And the amount of time that faculty spend with students and residents and so forth may be a little bit impaired, at least intermittently, until someone notices and says, we got to correct this, we got to take care of our students as well, and our residents, our staff, fellows. So that, I guess, if there were any negative consequences of that evolution, that was possibly one of the consequences. Although I don't think it was permanent. I think there were periods of time when, you know, there was a bit of stress and a little bit of misalignment. But I think ultimately we got to the point where we emphasized all of those key functions appropriately.
During the time that you were at the medical school, beginning with when Dr. Hickam was there, particularly during the 70s, the medical school really came to take over medical operations at Wisher Hospital in Mary,
right,
City, then Marion County.
Right.
By the time that you're chairman of the Department of Medicine, How would you characterize that relationship between, you know, that complex set of players, health and hospital and the medical school, and the, you know, the role of Wishart in the life of the medical school?
Well, during the time that I was chairman, from 83 to 90, we had University Hospital, we had the VA Hospital, and we had Wishart. And as from the point of view of a chairman of a department, I viewed them all as resources for the department to do teaching, to do research. We had labs in all those hospitals. And it worked beautifully. The administrations of the different entities, because these were all different corporate entities, they all worked together well. They were very cooperative. I mean, it was unbelievable. And you didn't even think about it. You know, I would have, when I was chairman, we used to have about 100 house staff. And at any given time, about a third of them were Wishart, a third of them were university, and a third were at the VA. And I would go make rounds at the VA, I'd make rounds at Wishart, had often committee meetings at Wishart, so I'd go over from Emerson Hall. And, you know, it's just another hospital that we went to. It worked very well, very well. It was the strength of the medical center. And I think it probably still is. The real conflict in terms of institutions and administrations and how doctors felt, et cetera, really began with the Clarion merger and Methodist being brought in under the Clarion umbrella. When that happened, which was in the first part of the 90s, I was gone. And you know, I used to think to myself, I'm glad I'm not an administrator there anymore, because I'm sure it was a big headache for Walt Daly, for Craig Brader, et cetera. Still is a headache. I don't know, you know, what Dan Evans has said, who I think is a great person, great leader, and has done very well in that role. But I'm told by physicians and by faculty and by nurses, there's still a problem. There's sort of, it's a we, they, us, them. You know, they've still not integrated, at least at the physician level. Administratively and so forth, maybe they have, but the physicians have not. They still view themselves as Methodist docs or IU docs or full-time faculty or practitioners who teach and so forth. So there's still, in fact, I was having a conversation the other day and I said, you know, kind of like the Israelis and the Palestinians. But when I was there, before all of that, the hospitals at the Med Center worked together seamlessly. It was one of the strengths of the Med Center. In fact, we used to use that in recruiting. It was one of the few places where you could go to where you had three major hospitals, a university teaching research hospital, a VA hospital, and a city-county hospital, all as part of the same system, and you could walk to. You didn't have to get in a car. And in the wintertime, you can get to via tunnels. That was pretty amazing. And a lot of the house staff that we recruited from out of state, that was one of the attractions.
When you, your time as chair of the Department of Medicine, when you look back now, what do you see as the sort of most important changes, and you can look at this two ways, within the Department of Medicine and also within the medical school as a whole, during the period that you were chair of the department?
Well, I think one of the, I mean, again, you know, that's a very broad question. But if you ask me what I think of as the or one of the most important, I think that it would be that the department became, and then eventually, hopefully, by the department's successes sort of influencing the medical school more generally, but we became more of a national force as opposed to a regional or local state kind of entity. And that we did that by recruiting faculty and house staff and fellows from all over the country. And who then were able to get nationally funded grants and begin to compete and do well on a national level as far as competing for grants, participating in committees on these NIH study sections, various national organizations like American Heart Association, American Cancer Society, et cetera, becoming national players. During the time I was chairman of medicine, we doubled the size of the faculty. And of the original number of faculty, only half of them were there by the time I moved on to Lilly. And of the new faculty that came, more than half were from out of state. So we really brought in a whole bunch of new blood, new thinking. Because I think it's true for every institution. You start out, you're local, then you become regional. And then eventually, if you're successful, you become national. And I would say during that time, during Dally's tenure, and then when I was chairman, we went from a regional to a national force. That's probably the most important change for the Department of Medicine, and I think that we influence the rest of the Med Center also, because you know we bring people in who had joint appointments. A lot of the grants we wrote were in collaboration with other departments. And the other departments saw what we were doing, and especially the clinical departments. The basic departments, some of them were already doing that, like biochemistry, I think, maybe pharmacology to some extent, physiology. But most of the clinical departments were not. They were sort of mostly teaching and taking care of patients.
You mentioned earlier the creation of the Division of Clinical Pharmacology as sort of an important development. Are there other institutions or units that were created at the time that you see as emblematic and sort of very telling about the kinds of changes that were going on, either in terms of the way they brought funding together or pulled people from different parts of the medical school?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Clinical Pharmacology Division certainly was one of the emblematic examples, because they don't do much in terms of patient care. They only do research and they do teaching. And so that was a good example of creating a division that whose entire focus was research, getting grants, teaching, training, particularly training fellows. There were a number of center grants that we started in the latter part of Dally's tenure, and then during my chairmanship, Specialized Center of Research in Hypertension, SCORE, Hypertension Program Project, several program project grants in cardiology, training grants, HIV/AIDS Program Project or Center Grant, a number of them, which are also very important in several ways. Number one, just showing that we could actually do it and get them funded. Secondly, they were multidisciplinary, multidepartmental, so they helped sort of integrate the medical center and get various departments working together at a higher level, showing that we could compete on the national scale and win. So I guess those would be other examples. But most of these things were, the teaching was solid and it's gotten even stronger. I think under Craig's leadership, it's gotten outstanding. The training of residents and house staff was solid. The patient care was solid. The research is the part that needed to really be developed. And I would say that in the, through the 80s and 90s, it really started to take off. So the examples I gave you are, you know, illustrate that.
So as a final question, in 1990, you left the medical school to go take a position with the Lilly Research Labs. And at the time, you were chairman of the Department of Medicine. And often in the history of the medical school, the chairman of the Department of Medicine is also often been one of the obvious candidates for the dean of medicine. But in 1990, you chose to move out of the medical school, academic medicine context, and go into a private corporation sort of research setting. What were the dynamics of that decision? Because at the beginning of your career, you know, you were there and had the experience at NIH and, you know, sort of found the calling for academic medicine. And now later in your career, you move into space. For you, what sort of drove that decision?
Mm. Well, I became chairman in 83 when I was 42.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fairly young yet. And so I did that for 7 years, and so I would have been 49 in 1990. And I just sort of, I knew that I wasn't going to be chairman until I retired. It was a great job, but I climbed most of the mountains internally within the department, within the School of Medicine, as well as externally, a lot of organizations, American Heart Association, for example. I was on the board of directors of it. They wanted me to consider running for president of the American Heart Association. I was also an officer of the American College of Cardiology. They, at one point, said, you know, I'm a candidate to be president. And so I sort of had gotten to the near the top, or the top of the mountains, and I was starting to think, well, what am I going to do next? Because I'm not sure I want to do this forever. And one of the obvious things was to hang on for a while and then eventually become dean. But I never really aspired for that position. I loved the chairmanship job, but I never aspired for the deanship, which was almost too much administrative for me. I like being able to focus on internal medicine, cardiology, and just keep my lab going. If you become dean, you have to focus on all the divisions. You have to focus on all the departments. You have to become much more outward focused, because you got to talk to the legislature, you know, all these outside constituencies, alumni, etc. And I just didn't think that'd be a whole lot of fun. And and about that time, I'd been chairman for 7 years, and I had never had a sabbatical in my entire time. Lily approached me and said, would you consider coming over? We have a program for certain selected individuals. Would you consider coming over and doing a sabbatical for 6 months? And I was sort of thinking about it anyhow. And so after several months of discussion, we sort of worked out a program, and I decided to go ahead and do that, take a break. I can't remember. I think maybe Craig was the interim chairman also when I did that. And about 3 months after I went there, the head of research at Lilly, Mel Perlman, good friend, started recruiting me. He said, you know, you ever think about just coming over here full time? And so we talked for a couple of months, and it sounded pretty interesting. Eventually I decided, okay, I'll give this a try. I'm not sure I'll be successful, but I can try. I don't have to move my family. If I fail, I'll go back to the med center. I'll be a professor. I'll see patients and stuff. And so that's how that sort of evolved. And then when I went over there, I was fortunate enough to be pretty successful. And 4 years later, I was head of research for the whole company and member of the board of directors. I had sort of gotten to the point, in other words, to summarize the answer, is being chairman was a great job. It was very rewarding and fun, but I needed more challenges, and I didn't see them there, except to become the dean. And I said, I'm not interested in that. So what am I going to do? And then this other thing from Lilly came along. So it's perfect, ultimately perfect situation, because then I was able to spent ultimately 13 years there. 10 of them as head of research and development, and as a member of the board of the company. So it was a great way to sort of finish out a career. And then now I'm basically starting companies in the biotech space, so sort of continuing that in the area of research, as well as medicine, clinical medicine.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Hopefully